Hi everyone, welcome to the All Things XR podcast. In today's episode, I have Dan Stein from Spatial Collective. This is the first episode of All Things XR podcast in a new format, and I have actually Dan as my co-host. And hi Dan.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here. Thanks. And glad we got all this recording stuff figured out.
Thanks very much. So, Dan, can you introduce our other guests and help us to get to know them better?
Yep. So, I'll start with myself. I've been in AR, VR for 10 years now, and I've done that across two different phases of my career. Three different phases. One was being an investor, one was being a CEO and founder, and one was working for the man at Meta. And so the fourth phase of my career is kind of taking all of the lessons I've learned over the last decade, from investing to being a founder to working at large tech companies, and resourcing that and then giving it to different founders so that they can benefit from that. And so that's what the Spatial Collective is. I started the business 6 months ago. And I'm proud to say we have 130 plus members. They're some of the best founders in the entire industry, as you'll meet today. And so kind of the reason why I wanted to co-host this with you and bring in some of our guests is to show the different stages of challenges that AR VR founders face from both a fundraising perspective, a brand perspective, a customer perspective. And then have each of them talk about how they're getting through those challenges or have overcame those challenges. Samantha, for example, her business has raised $28, $29 million in total. You know, that is very hard to do. And so she has a lot of stories she can talk about. She was just sharing that they closed the round recently and had a board meeting. So I think like learning from someone like Samantha is really great. Steven is more on the entertainment side. Yanira is a little earlier stage. And so we'd like to kind of go through their stories. And you can start to plot everybody on a story arc of how we go from where we are today to ultimately, hopefully, selling the company, becoming millionaires, and retiring on a beach and becoming a full-time podcaster. That's the goal.
Yeah, awesome. So can we start by getting to know our other guests? Samantha, can you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So I guess my name has been exposed already, but yeah, I'm Samantha. I'm chief of staff at a deep tech startup running out of the UK, if you can tell from my accent already. And we do holographic display, awesome. Which you probably think you already know what that is from science fiction and things like Abba Voyage and Tupac. And so I have this great wealth behind me of marketing material. That's actually not quite what it is technically, but I won't go into that too much. But we are sort of pioneering computational holography, which we think will replace all display in the next 10 years. But our first stake in the ground is XR, because we really believe that we are on the precipice of like mass adoption that's been promised for over 10 years. There have been some really, really hard hardware challenges and optical challenges. And we think, particularly with the help of our technology, those are about to be solved. And that's why we find the space so exciting.
Awesome. Yanira, can you also introduce yourselves?
Of course. I'm Yanira, and I'm building Imarock. And this is my co-founder, Ivana.
Do you want to? Yeah, so we started doing virtual reality, what now, like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
I've come from the video game space for more than 10 years. I started with a little Portal 2 modification called Aperture Stack, and then virtual reality was coming out, and then we started a virtual reality studio for real estate. Then we did a video game, virtual reality video game, a rhythm game called Musical Range, and now we're doing
Imarock.
Yeah. We're very awesome. Excited with the mixed reality, because we think it's at a point where like it's possible to play guitar. Like XR is fast enough, but we believe the next generation is just gonna be way smoother with a lot of the problems like hand tracking solved. So yeah, it's very exciting and super fun.
Awesome. Thanks very much. So Stephen, can you also introduce yourself?
You bet. I'm Stephen Labrum. I'm one of the founders of Misfit Movies Studios. We have recently entered the XR arena in producing narrative film for XR. It's something that we're quite excited about. We're avid VR gamers and little tech nerds that run this thing. But we felt that there's really a dearth of narrative filmmaking in the XR space for various reasons. The market is arguably still very small. The production costs are very high and technical. My partner and I were very excited about being part of something that is really pioneering. There's a lot of documentary content online, and there are a few examples of good narrative filmmaking online, very few, and which is exciting. We see that as great opportunity. We have great stories to tell that we feel like can be told differently in the XR space than any other medium. And so we're currently fundraising for a $5 million fund that will fund 4 separate projects. We're pre-fundraising on that. You just carry those Benjis around wherever you go. Okay, that's cool.
Even a manifesting.
Yeah. So we've raised $500,000 so far to fund development. Awesome. And to do some proof of concept work. And we intend to do everything fully independently. I feel like that's going to give us an opportunity to take on tougher stories, more interesting storytelling than sometimes things get watered down if it's sponsored by Meta or Apple as they're trying to not do anything that's too far reaching. So yeah. That comes with its own risks too. So because we're going to need, I guess we'll get into that in the discussion, but at our fundraising step, we see our biggest obstacles is convincing investors that there is enough of a market to take a chance. And at the same time, doing it independently gives us the opportunity to still tell stories that we think the users and the audience of that already own VR headsets will want to see.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So Don, can you tell us a bit about your analysis about the current state of AR and VR market, and what do you see in this market, and what are the potentials and opportunities?
Yeah, I think the number one lesson I learned with AR VR over the years is that it is 100% about framing. And so in order to frame something correctly to achieve your goal, you have to know your audience. So taking the three businesses we have here, for example, Yanira and Ivana, their goal is to be on the Quest store. So like that is a very specific type of pitch when you go to an investor. Or even when you go directly to Meta, it's a very specific type of pitch because there are usually winners that rise to the top. They get featured on the homepage. They take off. They make a ton of money. It's a consumer play. And so it's very important that you frame that type of a fundraise or that type of a business to the right people as a consumer app. And you talk about your story in the way that it should evolve. Samantha's business on the other end is a little bit deeper tech, more kind of enterprise-y, I would describe it. Samantha, you agree with that? You're nodding your head, so I'll keep going. Yeah. Okay. No?
Well, I have a fun sort of content story that maybe I think Stephen in particular would be interested in. And this is sort of, I guess, why we've explored XR, and I think we totally went into it with the same attitude of kind of the enterprise case, and it's still a strong case for our customers. You know, you need the kind of real selling point of our technologies. You need this 3D depth perception. So when you think about enterprise cases like a factory picker or someone working on a car, and you need it to be focused correctly, that's only achievable with a genuine 3D display. ours is the best one you can do because of physics, not just sort of because of marketing and sales pitch. But the kind of best story for us, and anyone who's seen our recent funding announcement will have seen that Game Tech Ventures just hopped on board with us, which is a gaming-focused VC. I'm talking to a few gaming-focused VCs based in the US who I think would be interested in leading a next round, and that is because I guess the thing is, we're on a call with a bunch of VR sort of lovers and enthusiasts. So I suspect that you guys and the audience maybe don't suffer from this so much. But most people, and the reason we haven't seen mass adoption of like VR technologies is because most people can stay in it for like half an hour and then they feel really sick. They feel nauseous. And that's because the stereoscopic imaging is sending one image to your left eye, one image to your right eye, and trying to trick your brain into thinking that it's seeing something 3D. And that's why the best-selling VR game is still like Beat Saber, which is an arcade game. But that's not how AAA game studios make their money. They make their money off of long-form narrative content, which is why Steven has exactly the right idea about where content in XR is going. But that's not going to be possible without some serious stepping up on the hardware side. But yeah, we want to make games that people can live in for hours, and we want to make movies that people can like sit in for a full sort of narrative unfolding. I want people watching like the entirety of Game of Thrones in XR. I mean, how amazing would that be?
Samantha, are you enabling that by selling to the developers, or are you building the content yourself?
So we have quite an exciting road ahead of us. We're currently looking at expanding to the US, and one of the key things we're going to be focusing on is building relationships with these content developers, because we are changing the parameters by which they could generate content for all of XR.
All right, I saw Steven want to jump in. I just want to finish my point. So exactly. So what Samantha's saying is, like, rather than going through the Quest store themselves, they're going direct to developers. So that is a very different framing for how you need to be speaking to investors. It's a very different framing for how you speak to customers than what Yanir and Ivana are doing. And then thirdly, Steven is talking about doing a fundraise to produce content. That is also a drastically different way of framing to investors. It's even a different investor base, different return horizons, different expectations of how you split profits. Like, the whole pitch is different. So to just like wrap the question up, and then I want to pass it to these three. Also, I have to run to the bathroom for 1 second. But like, it is really important that you understand where you fit on the spectrum of AR, VR. It's such a wide spectrum, from healthcare to entertainment to consumer apps to enterprise to developer tools. Like, it covers everything. And so that's, to me, is like the best advice I can give, is really take a look at what your business is doing specifically. It's not just XR. It's not just AR, VR. You are a subsection of that, and then you frame everything around that. And so that's why I think they're the perfect three guests, because they cover a wide arrangement of that spectrum. And Steven, I saw you're going to chat. I'll pass the mic to you while I run to the space.
Sure. I think, to Samantha's point, thinking about that user experience, I mean, we're doing episodic 23-minute episodes, but we could certainly be doing a 2-hour-long narrative film. And I personally can watch, like, with my Apple Vision Pro, I can watch a 2-hour movie. I don't get too fatigued. I kind of have dialed in the position that I'll be in so that the headset sits on there. Mm-hmm. But there are various aspects to that, not the least of which is letting the brain feel comfortable in that environment. And we've kind of determined to keep it under a half hour so that we don't lose our audience because of discomfort. So I'm excited about work like what Samantha might be doing, and I can't wait to learn more. This is Samantha and I's first time interacting with one another, because we're all trying to dial that in and figure that piece out, because we do want our users to have that longer term experience. And maybe to just one thing I'll add to what Don was just saying, one of the things that we're excited about as filmmakers is the path to getting to the audience has so many gatekeepers. And sometimes those gatekeepers in XR is just, can I make it to the store? Do I make it to the front page? In the film market, we're thinking, how do we get to a distributor, to get to that local distributor, to get to a screen that someone can see? And one of the exciting opportunities we think in XR is we can develop our own app that's our own viewer. We can be new in an environment that doesn't have a lot of narrative content. And we're making some assumptions about that, but it's certainly is exciting to be a part of a nascent industry. What the numbers thrown out, that there are 30 million headsets out there. I think about it even tighter as like, what's got the quality of a Meta Quest 3 or an Apple Vision Pro? That's maybe 2 million on planet Earth. And thinking about like that path to get your product in front of eyeballs, it is exciting to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Stephen, can you tell us a bit about how you're going to produce these contents? Are you going to capture and record those on 360 videos, or it's more like a simulation gaming environment?
Yeah, so we're doing very traditional filmmaking. We're using Canon makes a dual fisheye lens, and there are a couple different camera systems that it can connect to that are traditional camera systems, and we're capturing stereo 180. We made a decision to stick with 180, not because we don't love the full 360 experience, but particularly when it came to more narrative storytelling, we found that people don't want to search for Easter eggs as much as they want.
Exactly.
Not even just the full 180, but we're looking at very much keep our storytelling front and center. They don't have to move their head as much. I mean, we're thinking a lot about like eye line. Do they have to look down to see, to follow the story? That can become uncomfortable or frustrating for a viewer sometimes. So we've been doing a lot of testing around some of these concepts of what does, it's much different than the games that I like to play where I want the action to be around me, because that's the surprise of having something that I have to shoot behind me is far more interesting. But we're having to mix that with elements to get special effects and VFX. Now we're getting into like, okay, how do we bring these other 3D elements? Can we layer these things together? What does that mean technically? What does that mean for all the syncing and to keep the illusion going so that you don't lose your audience when something feels like too cartoonish? Those are all interesting challenges. But short answer, we're filming with traditional film and using that parallax in this and to create the illusions for the mind. But it's such a unique storytelling element because everyone's a man in the room. Everyone's an invisible or woman in the room. And so taking advantage of that, we're saying, why should this story be told in VR and not as necessarily a 2D screen? Because it's certainly easier to make a 2D movie and to watch a 2D movie. So we feel like it's incumbent upon us to make a compelling story that must be told in this medium and to provide the audience with a thrilling experience that they can't get in 2D. And we're so excited because we feel like it's finally there. I think especially, I mean, Meta Quest, Meta 3 certainly had some of the quality, but when we put Apple Vision Pro on earlier this year, we pivoted our business model. We were really more 2D traditional filmmaking. And we saw Highline and we're like, okay, it's here. It's here now. The experience, the quality, the breathtaking nature of it, the spatial sound and how that can augment someone's, I mean, theaters spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on Atmos Dolby systems just to create the illusion of sound being around you. And with a headset and the right audio equipment, you can create the most immersive audio experiences that you can imagine.
Yeah.
Add upon that, the stereo experience, it's a really exciting time, I think, to be telling any type of story or creating a game. And I'm excited for the horse race that Apple, I think, forced Meta to jump into a little even more so by bringing out such a high quality device.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome back, Don. So, Yanira, can you also tell us more about your product, your project?
Yes, of course. ImmerRock is more than just an app to learn how to play guitar or some other string instruments. In the future, we want that people feel like that they are grabbing their guitars and playing a concert in front of an audience or with their favorite artist. And Ivana, you can help me develop this idea.
Yeah, so we want it to be like we want it to be like your little body app that you cannot live without when you're playing guitar. And it's very exciting because, like you guys were mentioning, like, oh, discomfort is an issue, like, don't spend more than 30 hours. Like, there's been time on the weekends when I've been using the app until, like, I basically have, like, your battery is too low, which is great. And it's a very early product. And to be able to see, okay, mixed reality means you're not in a you still feel like you're at home. So that's very helpful to feel like, okay, you're not really in VR or using an app. You kind of forget about it. You're just playing your guitar, your instrument, playing the music that you love. And then, but we had like this vision, like Janira said, that we can immerse the user more, which is part of the name. Immerrock is like from immersion, but immer is also the German word for always. So it's like mm-hmm. always rock, immersion rock. And then, so being able to just lose yourself for hours, like playing music, that's, I think personally, that's something that I really want to do. But we also think like, okay, this is an app to help people. Like when we did our market research, a lot of the people were like, oh, I want to learn more music theory. I want to learn more techniques, more exercises. And it's a very surprising result, because if you tell people like, oh yeah, I'm doing an app to teach people music theory, like, that sounds boring, but we think like we can do something really fun and immersive and very effective using mixed reality. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's very, very exciting, very early, lots of technical challenges to solve, as well as the marketing challenges to solve as well.
Awesome, awesome. So it's mixed reality, right? So you're using the camera.
Can I just hop in there real quick on the music and VR side? I connected Yanira to the Piano Vision founder. And that's one of the reasons why I think Immerrock is a really good idea. When I was at Meta, I scouted and funded and brought on Piano Vision to the store, which was basically you put on a XR headset, and then in front of a real piano, it overlays the keys that you should play, and it teaches you how to play. And that is a really well-performing app. Very strong mm-hmm. founder, viral visuals. So I feel like Immerrock has the same opportunity to do what Piano Vision did with piano, but for guitar. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to clarify, I think it's a really great market, and it's proven in XR already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So mm-hmm. Guys, it's a mixed reality environment. You see your surroundings and you're using mm-hmm. the camera, right?
Yeah, so we're currently developing with the Quest Pro, but uh-huh. we have users using Quest 2, which is like black and white, so it's even less fidelity. Yeah. But ideally, it's like Quest 3, and we also want to pursue the Apple Vision in the future. But yeah, you basically see your real environment where you're in, but then mm-hmm. you have all of these virtual elements. You have like a mirror of your guitar that you can put right in front of your actual guitar, and then you see the notes coming like Guitar Hero style into your guitar, so you can like better track what notes to play, how to read them, how to play chords, how to finger each chord. And then like there is a whole lot of information that we can provide that, one of the main issues at the moment is that other apps out there, you have to use a screen or your phone, and being like fiddling with your phone and your legs, or just like having to stare at the tiny screen in front of you all the time is very limiting. With the mixed reality, you can like use it standing or sitting down, then you can move around, you can look around. So it feels more natural and less restrictive. You don't have to be like, oh, I want to change another song, let me go to my keyboard, use the mouse. Like you can just tap, tap, tap and move on. mm-hmm. So it's a lot of like more time playing guitar rather than fiddling with your pages. And then people people have told us like, oh, it's an issue having to like print all of the music sheets and the tablature. It's like, you guys are printing stuff still? We want to be able to make it easier, like being able to do this digitally.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, awesome. So Samantha, can you also elaborate a little bit more about what you're trying to do? And you talked about bringing the hologram to reality. What's your approach to doing that?
Yeah, so I guess we're the sort of like mature ones of the group. Like this has been a sort of 7-year journey for us. And as I said, spun out, or I think I said actually before we start recording, we spun out of the Centre for Advanced Photonics Engineering at Cambridge. And our CEO, who I will have to start with, you know, Nirvana, by the way, because he is a total guitarist nerd. You can see his guitar in the background here, actually. So I think he would be very interested in this. And we definitely have all of the quests in our office. He often calls himself an accidental founder because they were, you know, academics in a research environment, and they were researching holograms for data compression, and they got a holographic projector working in their spare time, and they could just see it was a little red space station originally, and our CEO was like, that's a hologram, that's like Princess Leia in Star Wars, like why isn't this everywhere, like why am I not reading about this in the news? And they were like, well, because it takes overnight to compute on like a GPU that's the size of your fridge. And so that was the first innovation that spawned VividQ, really, was we took what these optical physicists had created and combined them with mathematicians. And so that was the challenge, really, is getting all these different technical disciplines to talk to each other for the first time. And so then we applied mathematical principles to this problem, and we managed within a period of 4 weeks to get that same hologram generated from a smartphone in real time. And so that was our kind of secret sauce, really, was these proprietary algorithms and software. And that was the innovation that spun out the company. And it's been a 7-year journey since then to kind of find product market fit and figure out how to get that technology into consumer devices. And these are long sales cycles because, you know, we have a team of like 14 PhDs, some of the like greatest minds in the world working on this problem. But every single major tech brand that I could mention that I'm now not allowed to mention because most of them are our customers and we have confidentiality agreements with them, have holography teams working on this problem. And we still have it. I had it this week actually with a company who, if I told you their name, you would know of them. We had their team come in and they were just straight up like, we've been working on this for 10 years. Like, there's no, we know everything about holography. There's no way you can do what you're doing. And we showed them our demos and yeah, it's sometimes you see the light dying in these engineers' eyes a little bit. It's just, that's what we bring is the technological advancement there. So our approach has been to just keep working on those optical problems and those hardware challenges while trying to license our technology to the manufacturers. Because while we've made some brilliant advancements in kind of the computation side and generating these holograms and image quality and we use entirely off-the-shelf hardware components at the moment, but we're not a hardware shop. We're a small company in the UK. So that miniaturization story and embedding that in a device that you could have in your home, that's going to be done by our customers and commercial partners. So that's kind of been the journey. And on the way, we've obviously taken quite a bit of VC funding to get there in the last 7 years. So we've done three rounds to date. So the company spun out with some angel funding from angels that were connected to our CEO from his prior life in finance. And then we raised off, and that was in 2017. And then we raised our first round with a sort of Irish-based VC in 2019. That was led by Shore Valley Ventures, which is an Irish VC fund, quite big here in the UK, but probably not that well internationally. And the University of Tokyo Edge Capital also participated in that round. And then we raised, as I said, a sort of $15 million round in 2021, which enabled us to make some sort of like massive strides. I mean, we were the world first 3D pupil replicating waveguide, which is, you know, stuff that's in textbooks saying this will never happen. It's not physically possible. And then we kind of raised another round that was a split close between sort of late 2023 and 2024. Final tranche of it has just closed, which is a further sort of $7.5 million. And that's the kind of capital that it takes to sort of work on these problems. And so that's kind of been the journey. But yeah, our approach is kind of licensing tech to the guys that make the devices that that all of your stuff runs on.
Awesome. Thanks very much. So Don, why now? Why do you think it's a good time to start a VR and AR company?
Because the Spatial Collective exists and there's never been a better. No, I think...
That's a good reason.
I don't think there's ever been a good time to start a VR company, honestly. I think if you're starting an AR, VR company, 3D, computer vision, you're probably... not making the wisest decision if you're purely looking at it from a probability of success standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Investors aren't that hot on the topic. A lot of people in the press have written it off. A lot of great founders have turned their focus on AI, crypto, SaaS, healthcare. So I think there's actually a lot of reasons why it's not a great time to start an AR/VR business, which is also the reason why it's a great time to start an AR/VR business, because
exactly,
I've seen now three different cycles of this hype come and go. And the people that benefit most from the uptick of the hype, for example, when Zuckerberg renamed his business Meta and the metaverse became a thing, the people who benefit the most from those hype cycles are the ones that are doing it before they start. And so it's really important that you're entering into this market before it's hot, before it's a great time. And then we talk about this in the collective a lot, being a cockroach, which is basically the idea that AR/VR startup should be at a point where they're impossible to kill. So that's keeping a low burn rate. If you do raise a lot of capital, it's not spending all of it. It's focusing on business development, relationships with investors, sales. You know, if you can get profitable, get profitable. Like, those are the things that make an XR company a winner, because it allows you to control your timeline. And that's the hardest thing for all of our businesses, is staying alive on a long timeline because the market is so new and different.
Yeah, yeah. I had Aryan Gashkai a while ago on the podcast, and he was also talking about being a cockroach in VR and AR industry. He was a bit against AR for starting and right now, but his main
he's from Earthling VC. And he's an investor. He's come to talk to us twice, and you know, he's both technical and has a fund, so I liked his perspective. Don't agree with all of it, but I like his perspective, and he's definitely smart about staying lean and keeping a small team to be successful in the industry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially in these times, because this industry is changing, and especially with AI. So you guys, what do you think about the advancements of AI, and how do you think it can help us in the AR and VR industry?
I want to take this question first. I'm not going to say I'm skeptical of AI. Like, I think it's very good at solving problems. So the first question is, what are you trying to solve that you cannot do without AI? You know, when we try to apply to various grants and everything, where people say like, oh, do you do AI or are you planning to use AI? It's like, yes, there are some areas where it can really help. Like, what if we could have AI to get to transpose the music from the guitar in a song, like, in seconds? Yeah, that would be very helpful. Like, yeah, I don't have to do things manually. So having that kind of questioning, like, okay, we're doing it because it solves a problem, is very helpful. And I'm also very skeptical about how good it can get. Like, can it get better than the data you give it? So is your data very good? So those are like the main things to me about AI at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. What do you think?
I think like anything, the hype cycle is possibly bigger than what's actually possible. But actually, we love the focus on particularly generative AI at the moment, because particularly we have quite a strong thesis on AR. Our wonderful chief innovation officer Alfred recently gave a talk which was rather cheekily named "How the Metaverse Stole AR." Now, don't go wrong, we do love the metaverse, but our thesis is that the current device is not suitable, the current display is not suitable for the device of the future. And I think generative AI is one of those trends that really illustrates this, is we don't really have that interface for it. So we very strongly believe that augmented reality is the the only possible interface for generative AI. We call it interactive AI. It's like, it's not just good enough to have this AI bringing you digital information without you having to sort of do all the thinking yourself, but that needs to be in the world intuitively. And so we really think the next phase of AI and sort of human machine interface is having all of this digital content at your disposal integrated seamlessly into the real world. And that doesn't happen without AR. So that's our thesis very, very strongly. And so we love the AI boom at the moment. But yeah, there is a bit of this sort of skepticism around. I think some VCs are going to end up very disappointed. But that's because they've hopped on the bandwagon. And that's why I think if I were an investor, I would hope I'd made my AI investments a few years ago rather than at the valuations of today. That's for sure.
Yeah, Matt Meisnick's one of the smartest and brightest people in the art industry, founder of 60AI, has a code that says AR is UI for AI. And I really like that code. And I think that these are complementary technologies, and we can actually gain a lot with AI for our industry. So, Steven, what do you think? What do you think about AI and current AI?
Oh, sure. We use it in over various different ways. It's just another tool in our kit for upscaling video that came through with abnormalities for a script writing helper or proofreader. I mean, it's just another tool for us. And it's interesting that it carries a lot of risk for folks in the film industry, that SAG-AFTRA and some of the bigger unions are trying to establish a lot of rules around the use of AI that we don't disagree with. And I think they're also reacting to some of the hype around what AI might do, but it absolutely also will change the way people do their jobs. And so I found that just for us, we're looking for all the practical tools, especially as an indie film production company, like, what can this do? But one of my mentors said, every single time in film in particular, in our industry, that some new innovation has come along. Oh, great. It's now all digital. This is going to change everything. We're going to have all this extra money. He goes, the budgets never go down. They never get smaller. They just figure out new ways to use that money towards other things. So this idea that AI is somehow going to save the day and make everything more efficient, I think, is a misnomer. It's certainly going to take things that weren't possible before and advance them. So I do a little screenwriting, and if I get stuck at a spot, I absolutely go to Claude, which I trust to be the most creative of the AIs, and that could change in 2 months. But I'd say, here's my entire script. Give me 5 ideas of how I can close this scene out. And sometimes it's dog shit. Forgive me. And other times it's like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. All right, let's tweak that. And I think every creator needs to be thinking always about, what are the new paintbrushes to do my creation with? If you're not, because, oh, I'm going to ignore that, then that's silly. But you also can't think the paintbrush is going to do the painting for you either.
Mark Andreessen has a take similar to yours. And I was listening to a podcast, and he says that with VFX, everyone thought that the Hollywood expenses would go down, but it actually went up. Exactly. So, Don, what do you think?
I have two questions. I want to do a speed round with everybody. If I could take the co-hosting mic and ask everybody these two questions, I'd be curious to know. And then I have a consulting call at 7 minutes, but I know we started late, so everybody can stay on later. But these are two questions that I think are interesting to think about and kind of apply to everybody. So I'll start with you, Nira and Yvonne. All right, biggest challenge in your business right now, go.
Product market fit.
Yeah, traction. That's the key. We're doing everything we need to do for traction. So we're looking for new users to test our product. It's getting better, but we need more testers. So if you know someone who will be interested, like, please let us know. And if you're just listening to this, like, you can go to imerock.com to sign up. So that's imerrock.com.
Awesome. And second speed question. what percentage chance is it that that problem of product market fit will still be your biggest problem come next month?
Probably 100%.
Yeah. All right, like so that's a real problem then. That's good that you're
Make something that people want, figure out how to get more users to grow your app. And then if you get that, like, we believe that everything is gonna flow organically.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. And Samantha, how about you? What's your biggest challenge in the business right now? And since you have a larger company, maybe make it either specific to you or to the larger business.
Oh, that's a good one. So, okay, I think the challenge in the larger business is just we're solving this with getting access to the US market and opening a US office for the first time, but it's kind of really challenging some of the big tech incumbents to sort of productize new technology and not default on what's old because it works, and kind of just waiting for that domino to fall. And once they all do, you create a new standard. And that's really, I think, the moment where we'll have our sort of big win. My personal biggest challenge as chief of staff is sort of bandwidth. We have a lot of really exciting problems that we're solving that the team is, you know, wanting to work all the time on. It was also competing with a lot of product initiatives and a lot of customization for our customers. And so, yeah, resource allocation and making sure we're working on the right things and we're all aligned and driving sort of the company forward in our strategy and our tech roadmap, while also servicing all of this commercial engagement, which is fantastic, but kind of new for us. We've had 6 years of getting to play with and hack together whatever we're excited about. And so managing that transition is fun, and making sure everyone is still excited about what they're doing. That's what's occupying my head at the moment.
All right. And I have one bonus question before I ask Stephen the challenge question for Samantha. What is the best advice you can give to founders to stay excited for all those many years? You know, 7 years in business, 6+ years, like, what do you have to do?
So I'm not, I haven't been around that full time. I will hold my hands up and say I wasn't there in the beginning. But I was going to mention this earlier. I read a brilliant quote that was like, businesses don't fail because they run out of money. It's because the founders run out of enthusiasm. Yeah. And this is something that is so strong in our business because, you know, our guys come up with a new patentable idea every other week. And it's great and it's exciting. And then you're like, oh God, the sales cycle, the product development cycle starts again. And so the best advice for it, I think, is pick something that you love and be agile in your way of thinking about it, like react to change and be adaptable. And then you grow with the business and grow with the new challenges and with the new sort of the new avenues. And being open to that, I think, is the only way to stay alive. If you stay fixed in your first idea, your first mindset, those setbacks, I think, would completely overwhelm you. And I think, fortunately, I think that's something our guys are very, very good at.
I think it's great advice. You can be successful without money. You cannot be successful without excitement, is my opinion on All right, and yes. Stephen.
And you've got to be willing to be flexible. Like, that money might not always come from the sources that you wanted it to and that you planned it to.
Never, ever come.
And you've got to roll with the punches.
Never does it work out. Stephen, what's your biggest challenge right now in business?
Sure. Identifying the right VC partners or angel partners to take a chance with us on something fresh and new. And this is part of the reason I joined the Spatial Collective, if I can give a little plug to you, Don, is I wanted to be in the conversation with other XR CEOs and other XR developing companies. And because I need, my ideal investor is someone who loves film and television, potentially has some experience in there, but I'm looking for a partner that also understands the XR market much better than I do. I know that I think it's great and I love it and I love the technology, but like, I'm probably going to be approaching someone who's heavy and has done a lot of successful games in the area, because they're going to know my customer even better than I do. They're going to know the channels even better than I do. And so I think we know that we can make a great film. We are great storytellers. We're figuring out all these technical problems. What I don't know is what I don't know. What's it going to take to get in front of those, to get to that customer? And so I think that's going to be my biggest challenge over the next few months, is not just raising the money, because I think $5 million is a reasonable amount of money to raise, at least in my business experience, it has been. But getting the right partners that are really going to help us to figure out the unique aspects of getting that XR user to spend $1.99 to pay for another episode of Witch Wars, or one of our productions. And so there are a bunch of questions there that I don't know what I don't know. And I think it's still going to be something I'm talking about and struggling with over the next few months, is A, identifying who those right partners are, and B, getting in front of them with the pitch so that they believe, okay, this is someone we should take a chance on in a brand new market where there's really only one other example of someone doing narrative filmmaking in this space. That could be a tough challenge for us.
Out of all 10 years of people that I've met, thousands of people in VR AR, and I messaged you about this, you need to get a hold of Ted Shilowitz. You have to go get a hold of him. You have to get a hold of him. He will put you on a different track, do whatever it takes to get a hold of him. That's the best person that can help you do what you're trying to do. I would swear on that. And Ted, if you're listening, message us, okay? Thank you very much. All right, I gotta hop to a consulting call, but everyone, please stay on. I know we started late, so I'm gonna hop to this call. I'll see everyone later today as well, because we're gonna do the speed pitching with the whole group later.
Everyone, I think we can wrap up the episode, and it was a great, great episode for the first time in this new format. But promise me that you'll join me on a separate and one-on-one episode also, so we can get to know you and your product and your projects better.
You bet. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Great conversation.
Thanks so much. It was great having you on the All Things XR podcast. Thank you all very much.